A big midweek Wednesday show here on Connecticut Today. State Rep. Vin Candelora, Republican North Branford, chimed in about numerous issues on the state level, including whether or not there will actually be any legislation for A, tolls, or B, legal recreational marijuana. Joining us in the 5 o'clock hour, one of our go-to guys for politics, Dr. Gary Rose. He heads the Political Science Department at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. We chatted about the ongoing brawl in the Democratic presidential race and, of course, the impeachment trial of President Trump. Another bit of at the state capitol. Yesterday, we suddenly hear that maybe in some way, shape, or form, there's a push for legalizing recreational marijuana in Connecticut. Now, we were talking about this about 8-9 months ago, spring and summer, in the regular session. Now it's suddenly bubbled back, but one of the folks who said there's really no votes for it up there as yet is Republican Vin Candelora, North Branford, Assistant Minority Leader. Vin, it's Paul here in Bridgeport. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me. Good, thanks.
Oh, Vin, great to have you on again. Well, all of a sudden, Vin, we're in the middle of tolls, and then the tolls go away, and the tolls come back. And the tolls go away, and the tolls come back, and then all of a sudden, we have recreational marijuana again. Did this kind of catch you guys by surprise up there or not?
I think at this point, I'm back to more of an eye roll than a surprise, and I think it's why people are discouraged and don't really trust government. You know, last we left in the long session, which is the appropriate time to have those debates, we decided, you know, they didn't have the votes, and it was said that they're not bringing marijuana back for this session. And then all of a sudden, the governor announces that he wants to try to resurrect it and bring a marijuana bill to the legislature. He's not on the same page with his Democrat colleagues. There are some people that want to look at a constitutional amendment. Let's get it to the voters. He wants to go back to the other bill that failed last session. So there just is really no coordination of effort. I feel like there's really not an adult in the room that's sort of directing, you know, what we should be focusing on. And unfortunately, the state of Connecticut becomes victim to all these different proposals that are flying around.
You know, Vin, I've talked about this with numerous legislators, with Len Fasano. I talked to Tony Wong in the studio here a couple of days ago. It seems that the governor, and I know he's trying, I know he's looking for solutions, it seems, Vin, and you're up there obviously far more than I am, but it seems like there's this ongoing disconnect between the executive branch, the governor and his folks there, and the folks that you deal with on the other side of the aisle on a regular basis, where stuff that is brought up in an election year that are very contentious issues by the governor seems to be disconnected, A, from any desire to do that from the Democrats, or in the way to do that, as you say. Here's the governor saying, well, do it the regular way through the legislative process, and you have some people you work with on the other side of the aisle saying, well, no, let's do it through a constitutional amendment. Is there a tug of war going on up there, Vin, as far as who's really dictating things or not?
Well, you know, I think there definitely is a disconnect and a lack of coordination between the Democrat leadership and the legislature and the governor's office. So you see the governor putting up agenda items that are different from the legislature, and rather than coordinating it, there ends up being that tug of war. And I think, you know, the governor fell flat on tolls. He's searching for a victory. And I think, you know, for whatever reason, he's taking up the gauntlet again on marijuana, trying to find that victory. And I'm just concerned of what that's going to look like and the impact it does have on the state of Connecticut. So there is sort of a strange tug of war. But I think it's more out of a lack of coordination.
You know, Vin, also the idea of getting this done through a constitutional amendment, I mean, that's serious here. And we realize we're in a state that does not have initiative and referendum. And, you know, that's a point of contention. Some people like it. Some people say, well, no, you have to do everything legislatively. However, I think we're one of only 11 states that doesn't have any form of INR. You know, Vin, I would think, this is just my dopey opinion here sitting behind a mic, I would think there are far more important things if you're going to monkey around with the Constitution of our great state. I don't necessarily think recreational marijuana is the first thing you need to do it for.
Yeah, and I think taking a step back, you know, to your point of the lack of not having that right of referendum for the voters, being one of 11 states, in 2008, we had that ballot put on the question of whether or not the voters would want that right. And unfortunately, the Democrats actually opposed giving the voters that option. And so now they can't get something passed legislatively. You know, we've had single party rule for the last, you know, 12 years. The Democrats in the legislature loved that control, and they didn't want to give the power to the people back in 08. Now that they can't get marijuana passed legislatively, they want to put that out to a referendum. And my concern is, you know, philosophically, they're not principled. They're sort of manipulating the process to just get what they want, and they're using the public to try to get that. If we are going to have a constitutional amendment, you're right, we should not be having an amendment to vote on marijuana. We should be having a broader discussion on an amendment to allow the voters to petition the government.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whether it be to recall an elected official or to propose legislation that they want passed. I think the voters have a right to, you know, should have that right to do it.
State Rep. Vin Candelora, Republican, North Branford, joins us. Yeah, Vin, I remember that. A lot of people don't realize that because of a long-running court decision, I believe, the state has to ask voters, I think it's once every 10 or 20 years, do you want to have a constitutional convention to amend the Constitution? And Vin, the weird thing was, if you and I both remember correctly, back in 08, so we're going on 12 years, a number of election cycles ago, the support for that from polling was pretty strong. It was above 55 or 60%. I said, thank God this is probably finally going to happen. And if you remember, Vin, there was a massive ad push that happened late in the campaign, paid for, I think, by the State Teachers Union. And because I remember, paid for by the Connecticut Education Association.
Right.
And they miscategorize what would happen as saying, oh, Republicans want to outlaw gay marriage or something like that.
That's
and I said
right.
to myself, what in God's name are they talking about? Am I remembering that correctly?
That's right. I'm not sure specifically the ads. And I know certain unions, state unions, were involved in those ads. But, yeah, there was a big push and it was defeated by a 2-to-1 margin, I believe. And it was unfortunate that it was really mischaracterized, that entire process, because, you know, voters basically all they voted to take away a say that they might have been able to have in the process. And I think with a state that has one party rule, it's an important tool, because I think voters should have the option to prevent tax increases from going through at the rate that they're going through. But there's no backstop.
Vin Candelora is the guest. Vin, hang on a couple more minutes with you after we do traffic and weather together on the sixes right here. More with Vin Candelora from North Branford straight ahead on WICC. And yeah, the mayor's not bad. 95, Route 8, 91. All them nifty roads. Here in the great state of Connecticut at 418, 18 past 4, we continue with North Branford Republican State Rep. Vin Candelora, Assistant Minority Leader, talking about what's going on up at the Capitol there with medical marijuana, recreational marijuana, tolls and all that. Vin, now we're hearing from the governor, well, maybe we'll do some sort of a public hearing in the next week or so. What is, at 418 on a Wednesday, Vin, what's the latest you're hearing on the trucks-only tolls proposal? Do we have something on paper yet? That's what I keep hearing, is there's nothing written down yet.
Yeah, so we, as you know, legislators, and I am in leadership, we have not seen a copy of a bill. So it's pretty frightening to think that we're going to go in and vote on a comprehensive transportation plan, potentially without even having a seat in the language. And potentially without having a public hearing. And I think what the Connecticut residents are seeing is what's wrong with Connecticut government and why we are where we are. this is not the way that we should be reforming transportation in the state of Connecticut. Very light on detail. There's a lot of questions to be answered, no public input, and we're going to be potentially voting on a bill a week before we go into regular session, which is when that item should be taken up again. So, you know, I've scratched my head on this whole thing, and, you know, I guess if we could flip a coin on whether or not we're going in, I will be shocked if we do go in. I don't think at this point it's even a responsible way to conduct government. Mm-hmm. Doing it that way.
And you know, we've talked to a number of people on your side of the aisle, Len Fasano among them and Themis Claridis, and they all say the Republicans will stand tied and not vote for this. But they all think that the Democrats and the governor's side still, despite what our buddy Martin Looney said a couple of weeks ago, still don't have the votes necessary. Is that your sense? Vin, do you think they're getting the holdouts, or are they still in a holding pattern here? What's the buzz?
Well, I think what people should be concerned about is, how do you get votes on a proposal that doesn't exist? You know, the vote shouldn't be tolls or no tolls. You know, if I was a state representative, which I am, but I would want to see the whole package before I decide whether I'm going to vote yes or no. So while, you know, many of us are against tolls, we have always said that we will look at what is being put on the table. So I don't know how they really get the votes without seeing what that proposal looks like. And the fact is, they want to rush it through, because when anything gets the light of day and gets a little bit of scrutiny, it's more apt to fail. And that's why they want to try to rush it through, so people don't realize what they're actually voting for.
And you know, Alex Bergstein, Democrat state senator from down here in Fairfield County, I applaud what she said last week, Vin, even though I don't necessarily agree with her on the issue itself. You probably saw the quote or the quotes where she said, listen, I'm not going to vote for anything, or I'm not inclined to vote for anything that's going to hamstring a future gathering of the General Assembly X amount of years down the road from doing something with cars or changing the whole tolling structure. Now, while I differ with her on the need for tolls, I thought, Vin, in my eyes, that was refreshingly candid, saying that you can't vote for something that binds either party down the road on any sort of issue like this.
Yeah, and I think the bigger issue, too, is that in reality, absent an extraordinary, you know, a constitutional amendment, you're not binding the future legislators. So it's really a ruse. And what she's exposing is the fact that this is all about tolling cars. It's not necessarily just trucks, and whatever legislation they put forth can be undone by future legislators. So to suggest that they could somehow tie it up and make it trucks only permanently forever and ever is really a fallacy. It's just not going to happen.
All right, Vin, one final issue before we let you go. Again, something that we've talked about, which I frankly wish we'd get off the stick on, but there are extenuating circumstances. The governor, again, floating the idea of sports gambling, worried that, you know, the border towns will spend their money in other states. But obviously, as you guys and gals have told me, this involves the compact with the Mashantucket Pequot tribe and the Mohegans. And as I guess, there's always been kind of this ongoing discussion there. Do you see this moving forward, Vin, anytime soon? Or are we going to still be in this extended legal morass here?
Yeah, I mean, until I think we bite the bullet and make a decision of, do we keep the compact or do we break it and let it go, is the question that needs to be answered. Because short of that, I don't see it moving forward. You know, it's interesting to note that the casino tribes engage in gambling all over the world. So they have private enterprises all over the globe. And yet Connecticut is bound by this compact and by this monopoly, and it's not so lucrative for the state anymore.
No, you're right, Vin. And in fact, if you look at the numbers, as I mentioned here on the show all the time, the slot revenues are consistently going down.
Consistently. You know, there's a new way of gambling now, and that is the online gambling, which is something that Connecticut should take a look at, and they shouldn't be hamstrung by the compacts in doing so. When the Keno was implemented in the state of Connecticut, the tribes came in and got 25% of Keno without doing anything. And so they're getting a substantial portion of Connecticut's revenue on Keno under the guise of the compact, which I personally think, you know, the state shouldn't have done. That was a bad deal. And so they're at the trough taking revenue out of our state budget instead of giving us revenue. So it's a real odd relationship that I really think we need to take a look at.
All right, Vin, we appreciate the time. State Rep Vin Candelora, North Branford. Vin, we'll be in touch. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, folks, did you know that? Thanks for Vin for breaking that for bringing that up. One of our go-to guys right now with all things political on a national scale. He gives a little local angle to it. Dr. Gary Rose, chair of the Political Science Department at Sacred Heart University in beautiful downtown Fairfield. Gary, how are you? Good to talk to you again.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Well, not too bad. Boy, is there something going on in Washington? Did I miss something today?
Well, yeah, I know. I was up late last night watching it. And
did you? How late did you stay up till the rules vote or not?
No. I went to bed a little before that, but I did go fairly deep into the night. But you know, voting on and listening to these amendments and voting on amendments and the rancor that I saw. Oh, wow. It's just, it really is. And you know, today what I missed, though I heard about it, is how the Chief Justice actually finally decided to step in and admonish both sides, apparently for what he felt was some uncivil discourse. And so I'm really glad that that Chief Justice John Roberts took the initiative to do that.
Yeah, and he has the temperament, you know, he's a little bit of a controversial guy with both sides, but he has a temperament to do that, and he's there, you know, with the Senate parliamentarian next to him about what he can say or what should happen or what can't happen. Boy, Gary, that's a real reflection of where we are as a nation, and it's funny that when you hear, and of course we'll have the Democrats for another 2 days, then the Republicans for 3 days, and then finally the vote. When you hear what the Republicans are saying, you know, Gary, unless something earth-shattering comes here, and we've been having sound bites all day here on the station from our CNN folks doing news, you have, you know, Lindsey Graham pretty much saying, listen, you've been after this guy since day one. You gave him no shot. And unless you come up with, you know, an atomic bomb somewhere, you guys got no shot. At least that's the impression I'm getting.
Well, I think you're right. That is the impression that I think many of us have, that, you know, they are at this point saying, if this is it, and not only that, what is interesting is that members of the House are still suggesting that there's more evidence that should be introduced. And that really is unprecedented. You know, like Cipollone said, you know, the president's lawyer, he said, if I ever walked into a court and said, I'm ready to go, but yet, at the same time, I need more evidence and it's coming, he said he'd get thrown out of court. Because, you know, the House had an opportunity now to really build its case and to present it to the Senate. And now you have members of the House saying they still want to introduce more evidence. And to me, you know, it was you had that opportunity, and the Senate right now has the obligation and the power, really, to have that trial and to review what has been presented. And if what has been presented is incomplete, I mean, that's on the House Democrats, not on anyone else.
Yeah, and Gary, there was that assertion by Jonathan Turley, who, of course, caught a lot of flack for this, and he came out, you know, a few weeks ago and said, listen, I'm no grand supporter of President Trump, but I think you and I talked about this. Turley came out and said, well, you know, you're rushing this. This is the kind of thing that, not in this compressed time frame that we're looking at toward the election, Turley was there saying, this stuff, you know, in the Nixon impeachment took a year and a half to do.
Yeah, they wanted to get it all in before Christmas, and they had an opportunity, but they chose not to do it, to go to court to decide on the witnesses and whether or not President Trump's executive privilege was applicable, and they chose not to do that, and they had that opportunity, and instead they rushed this impeachment through. Again, they wanted to get it in before Christmas, and then now what we have here before the Senate is, at least from what I can see and what I know a number of Republican senators are suggesting as well, and the president's lawyers, we have really an incomplete set of charges that really see, I don't think the House completely did its homework on this matter.
And Gary, also, we have the other narrative. I know the Republicans are trying to build. Is it okay that phone call might have been a little greasy, and okay, maybe he was turning the screws on Ukraine. But you have some people, I've heard the arguments today on both sides saying, yeah, but does this rise to the level of removing a president? Because, you know, as a member of the House said a couple of weeks ago, he actually read a list, I remember, during the House portion of this, and I wish I could find out who it was, but I heard it, you know, half-eared here, and he listed all the untawdry things that have been happening since FDR up through JFK, and he said, well, listen, then basically all of these presidents should have been impeached.
Well, that's right, yeah. Yeah, it does bother me when I hear President Trump say that it's a perfect phone call. He has said that too many times. I mean, I've read the transcript. We even read it in my class. It's not a perfect phone call. But I agree with you that, you know, nevertheless, for this to rise to the level of high crimes, which the Democrats are claiming, that really just to me is such a an exaggeration, and another thing too. And I know that when Alan Dershowitz, you know, speaks, he's going to address this too. Is that, you know, to have a high crime, you have to actually have a law that is broken, and that's another thing about these articles of impeachment. You know, abuse of power and obstruction of Congress, but yet there is no statute that they are identifying that this president has broken. Whereas under, you know, President Clinton, there was perjury, which is an actual charge. And if you go back to Andrew Johnson, it was violation of a federal law, the Tenure of Office Act. But in this case, we just have these broad terms that the Democrats have come up with, and there's no statute or actual law that the president is accused of breaking.
Gary Rose is the guest, chair of the Political Science Department at Sacred Heart University. Gary, hang on. We'll be back to you in a moment. I want to talk about what's going on continuously on the Democratic side of the White House race. Gary Rose, once again, one of our go-to guys. He chairs the Political Science Department at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. And as he quite interestingly pointed out there, there is no real pointed statute that the president has violated here. Now, some will say, well, impeachment is political and not criminal, maybe, but this is something you're going to hear reflected in the arguments next week by the Republicans. More with Gary straight ahead. Traffic and weather together first here on WICC. Coming up to 18 past 5, thanks for joining us on this Wednesday afternoon. Paul Pacelli here on WICC 600. Dr. Gary Rose, chair of the Poli Sci Department, Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. You know, Gary, you and I obviously read a bunch of, you know, really down the middle, you know, mainstream political stuff. But there's also that stuff kind of on the fringe or the opinion columns. I read one last week that was kind of interesting regarding the timing of this whole thing. And it was a writer who said, maybe the reason Nancy Pelosi did this now, Gary, is knowing that the Iowa caucuses are coming up the week after next. It's not that far away. Is this some sort of nefarious way to maybe slow down Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren? Because, you know, Gary, they have to sit there now for 2 weeks. And guess who's all by his low? Well, Pete Buttigieg and Joe Biden are out there going, hey, let's have a party in Iowa.
Yeah, you have to wonder if there is something else at work here in the timing. I've heard that hypothesis, if you will, presented as well. I don't know if that, in fact, was the reason. My gosh, and I'm not even sure if Nancy Pelosi is a big fan of Joe Biden. That has not really been demonstrated yet. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, it does make you wonder if in fact, you know, the Iowa caucus, as you say, is coming up just in a couple weeks, and yet these senators who are on a roll, like Bernie, certainly, and Klobuchar is rising too.
Sure, yeah.
You know, yeah, has to actually, and then of course Warren. I mean, we can't forget her, of course. You know, they have to sit in the Senate while the voters in Iowa now are really at this point, I think, starting to crystallize their decisions on these candidates, and yet they're not there. I know they have surrogates out there, but that's by no means that is that the same. And so I think that it is going to benefit. And, you know, the polls do show that it's really a really tight race out there. And this could potentially help Joe Biden, as you're suggesting, because now, and Pete Buttigieg to some extent certainly too, because now really he's got the he's got Iowa to himself for a few weeks.
Yeah,
and it must be killing these senators.
Oh my God, they have to sit there. And come on, we know how the Democrats are going to vote. That's fine, but my God, it's got to be killing Bernie and Klobuchar and Elizabeth Warren and everybody else to be sitting there. Speaking of Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. And Hillary was back this week promoting her series coming up on Hulu. Boy, she, to use a hockey mentality, Gary, she threw a couple of haymakers at Bernie in that The Hollywood Reporter interview, huh?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, once again, Hillary is throwing Bernie under the bus, as they did in 2016. It seems to be a continuation of that.
Is that, and, Gary, because do they have a genuine fear that he could win the nomination?
Yeah, I think so, and I think they feel that that Bernie in some respects is stealing sort of the Democratic Party away from pulling the Democratic Party away from the establishment, which the Clintons represent, and I think that's a big part of it. I mean, he is transforming. He really is. He's transforming in many ways that Democratic Party, and the younger generation of Democrats are very strong supporters of Bernie. And I think what you see here is Hillary Clinton and the establishment Democrats really feeling that Bernie Sanders is really taking their thunder and taking their party in a way that that they simply don't want it to go.
And it was an interesting quote. You probably saw it from AOC. She said in an interview she gave, and, you know, people criticize her, but she every so often she comes out with something pretty perceptive. She said, look, in the minds of younger voters, the Democratic Party is not a political party. They are a centrist party. And she's talking about, you know, we need to have a real progressive movement in this country. Mm-hmm. And, Gary, you know, I've always wondered aloud. I say, well, maybe this time, maybe the next time. I wonder if this country will ever honestly have a third party. And I know the libertarians are out there, and I know the, you know, there's a socialist out there, but a really viable left-wing party, centrist party, and a right-wing party, much the way you and I see in these European elections. You think that, is that schism coming or not?
You know, you hear an awful lot about that, and people cite the high percentage of unaffiliated voters as you know, suggesting that they kind of yearn for a centrist third party. But actually, Paul, you know, the research shows that most of the unaffiliated voters, the vast majority of them, in fact, do lean towards either the Republican or the Democratic Party. It's about evenly split. And really, when you come right down to it, you only have about 10 to 15% of the electorate that is truly unaffiliated and in the center. And so you have that problem working against a third party. But other problems that a third party faces here in Connecticut, or I'm sorry, not just Connecticut, but in the nation, is, you know, ballot access laws. And that makes it very hard for a lot of third-party candidates to get on the ballot, let alone, you know, then campaign finance laws work against them. I mean, the election laws, and then, of course, if you talk about presidential, you know, the Electoral College works against a third party. And so, you know, it's really the laws, the election laws that we live under, and which are controlled by Republicans and Democrats, which really do a pretty good job of, if you will, smothering third-party movements. And many feel that it really is, you know, illegal and unconstitutional, and we've had challenges in court. But I don't, for one, honestly, I mean, you've mentioned the Libertarian Party and the Greens and so forth, but I don't actually see a real significant third party emerging in the immediate future. I know we always hear about that, But I think there are just too many obstacles. And even just the voters themselves, the way they lean right and left, I don't think it's going to happen.
Gary, in about the minute we have left, you talked about talking about this in your class with some of your students and going over some of this with them. How are your students at Sacred Heart reacting to the whole to the election, but more precisely the impeachment thing? What are they saying? Do they understand what's going on? Are they fascinated? What are they saying?
Yeah, they are. They're my students. You know, the political science students are certainly very up on it. And you know, ours is a pretty centrist campus. You know, we did have, I remember in 2016, we had a Feel the Burn movement among some, and then we had also some Trump supporters. There's Sacred Heart Students for Trump. Mm-hmm. But most of our students are down the middle, and quite frankly, I don't, from just the discussions we have in class and discussions I have with students in my office, quite frankly, I don't sense there's a great deal of support for this impeachment movement on mm-hmm. President Trump. You know, there's a lot of New Yorkers in our at my university too, and you know, where Trump is from, and they remember Rudy Giuliani too, and so I don't really sense that our campus is really a pro impeachment campus. I think you would find it quite different, you know, if you interviewed
go to Yale
over at Wesleyan University.
Yeah, you think?
You think Sacred Heart?
You think Bernie is? You think Bernie is big at Wesleyan or at Yale in New Haven? What do you think? Huh?
I think, yeah, big time.
Gary, right. Thank you as usual, Dr. Gary Rose, head of the Poli Sci department. Great to talk to you from Sacred Heart University. Gary, be good.
Okay, Paul.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Bye bye. All right, there you go. Interesting. Sacred Heart, a centrist campus, which is nice.